Billions of dollars are spent each year to influence consumers through advertising. Yet studies indicate that people make 70% of their buying decisions right in the store. Choices based on price, quality, convenience, and other more subtle factors of which they're unaware. Retailers know that in an era of shrinking profit margins, their very survival depends on understanding those subtle factors that determine buying decisions. In part three of a series on the psychology of getting and spending, NPR's Brooke Gladstone shops with America's foremost authority on the science of shopping, Paco Underhill.
Paco Underhill knows why we buy, because he hires people to quietly track us as we read labels in Walgreens or fondle sweaters at the Gap. He knows because he'll set up half a dozen video cameras in a single store and then analyze the tapes.
How many thousands of hours of videotape do you think you've seen?
More than I'd ever care to admit to.
He found that the care and feeding of the American consumer is fraught with complication, but there are a few rules that govern our behavior. For instance, the rule of the invariant right. That's the direction we move in when we shop.
Generally, people tend to circulate counterclockwise. It is the most natural motion for us, since 85% of the world is right-handed. In Britain and in Australia, people tend to circulate clockwise, just the way they drive.
And like cars, we can't stop on a dime. We speed past bank windows, there's nothing to look at, and then take up to 15 feet to slow down. Bad luck for the shop next to the bank. There's the same lag time when we walk from the street into the shop, and that's why stores in the know don't put big ticket items by the door.
At the entrance to most stores is something that we call a decompression zone, where somebody has to, in effect, downshift, change their gait, expand their peripheral vision. Sometimes it takes people anywhere from 5 to 15 steps to make that change from fourth to second gear.
Big budget retailers gladly pay Underhill's company EnviroCell tens of thousands of dollars for insights like that. Case in point, Bloomingdale's. Why did one tie rack attract women in droves while its identical twin in another aisle was shunned? Underhill's cameras revealed a simple and enduring truth, what he calls the brush butt theory.
Anything that makes women uncomfortable means that they're likely to move on rather than stand there and shop their ground.
Simply, women will bolt if they're brushed from behind. And Underhill told Bloomingdale's that the neglected tie rack should be moved to a wider aisle. It was, and the women followed.
It's very subtle, very real, and very common.
Underhill resents the epithet supermarket spies occasionally applied to himself and the trackers who work for him. In his book, Why We Buy, he writes, "We all accept social science techniques when they're used to study a rural marketplace in Papua New Guinea. Now, why should our investigation of a mall in Minnesota be held to a different standard? Who is this man to be watching us?"
I'm a bald, nerdy, middle-aged researcher.
He trained under the renowned urban anthropologist William White, who posted cameras in public places to observe human behavior. Underhill applied White's use of cameras and his anthropologist's perspective to the selling floor. But it was Underhill's own experience, as the son of a diplomat always on the move, a kid with a chronic stutter, that taught him how to see.
I often had to rely on my eyes as a way of making my peace with the world, since I was often embarrassed to try and ask a question. Every stutterer finds his own ways to cope with his affliction. I think the most important one is deciding that you have something to say and that people will damn well better listen to it.
So let's hear what he sees when we go shopping.
All right, so now we're standing in front of the Barnes & Noble window.
It's tough to make a good window in the book business. Virtually nobody that walks past looks. To be able to get some design equity out of this window, you almost have to stand at it, which is not a comfortable mode on 22nd Street and 6th Avenue in New York City on a hot Tuesday afternoon.
With its wide open spaces, coffee and comfy chairs, Barnes & Noble turned the bookstore into the third destination for gathering after homes and offices. But Underhill says the displays suffer from too much conformity.
One of the most important things about a book display is that it not look too perfect. Because in effect, if it looks too perfect, you almost want to keep your hands off of it.
And why give prime space to calendars in July, or put baskets in the entrance where impulsive book shoppers won't think to pick them up? And why use bookcases that hold books down at ankle level, too low to go?
Being an author, whose last name starts in U. I live in horror of all of the A's on the top shelf and U's on the bottom.
It seems obvious, the way people move, see, reach, and touch. But actually, humans present a complex matrix of behaviors, says Underhill, that changes according to age and gender and the item being sought. Mostly men shop the way they drive. They won't ask directions, and if they can't find it fast, they'll leave. If they find it and it fits, they'll buy it. Research shows that 65% of men who try an item on buy it, as opposed to 25% of women. Women can go into a kind of reverie when they shop, absorbed in the meticulous consideration of an item, a meditative state that Underhill has observed calls for wide aisles and sheltered corners. But not always and not everywhere. Not at Filene's basement.
This is the bargain shopping pioneer. They come here to aggressively graze, to search. This is a place that successfully breaks the rules because it counts on a certain measure of feeding frenzy. The aisles can be crowded. They can have a bargain rack stuffed in the front door. This is a place where people will tolerate a significant degree of butt brush in the quest for that perfect sleeveless dress.
On to Bed Bath & Beyond, piled high with an infinite array of gadgets and accessories. Here, packaging takes the place of salespeople, telling you all you need to know. But even more important, says Underhill, are the items taken out of the box for us to see, hear, smell, and touch. Humans live by the senses, he says, and we buy by them too.
The same patterns of behavior that you see in other people, you feel them at work in yourself?
Oh, absolutely. Sure. I'm human too.
He moves towards a vast wall of packaged sheets mounted with pre-washed pillowcases for touch testing.
We are looking at pillowcases that at the high end run about $33 a package, which is very expensive. But when we touch it, we can almost see our faces sliding into the arms of Morpheus, courtesy of its softness here.
What did you call the activity that you were just engaged in?
Petting.
To the captive audience at the cashiers, bagel slicers and Teletubbies gleam and grin, and a battery-operated Rockin' Santa plays music while doing the twist in July.
That is one ugly device, but I'm sure there are about six people in my life that would absolutely love it.
As Underhill has observed, if we went into stores only when we needed to buy something, and if once there we bought only what we needed, the economy would collapse, in his word, boom. That's why the science of shopping is a force. But as in any science, there are some questions that resist a satisfying answer. For instance, why anybody would buy an animated rocking Santa is something we may never understand. Brooke Gladstone, NPR News, New York. Stop the jingle bell.